Hello and welcome to episode 4 of series 2 of the Poolside Pass podcast. On today's episode, we're moving outside of the swimming world and we're going to be speaking to Mark Bennett about need-centered approach to coaching. I feel like it was about time we moved away from some swimming specific topics and just touched in on some general coaching practice topics as well. Before we get into the main segment of the podcast, here's a quick line from our sponsors, Streamline. Become a qualified swimming teacher with Streamlined in as little as 6 days. Learn at your own pace and be guided by our expert tutors. You can do your training face-to-face, online in real time, or a combination of the two. Assessment can be in your club using videos or attending one of our assessment venues. We offer tailored, high-quality support. Quote the Poolside Pass for an extra 10% discount. Okay, so I think it's about time I introduced Mark to the podcast. Mark Bennett, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure to discuss to a new group, a new audience.
Yes. Mark's, you're not someone that we often hear from in the swimming community, so it'll be good to hear from you on the topic today, which is need-centered coaching versus athlete-centered coaching. But let's just start with getting a little bit of background from yourself in performance and coaching.
Yeah, so I've spent 30 years, sounds a long time now, doesn't it, really exploring and having a passion for understanding how can you influence people. Obviously, I started in the military. I was one of the senior instructors in the Armed Physical Training Corps. I also ran the Commando Training Wing. And through those periods in the 90s, I really made the connection with that we weren't very good at developing people. We were really good at developing people that had the mental strength and tenacity and good emotional intelligence, you know, interpretation of what that is, and their ability to self-evaluate and learn, etc., discipline. But we weren't very good at developing that in the people that didn't have it or understand how to adjust based on the need of the individual in front of you in that moment. So I went on a journey of discovery to develop that. And since then, I've been lucky enough to work with from grass in inner city schools in America and in UK, from primary school all the way up to international teams, pro teams, in all around the world, including England rugby, Premiership rugby, NBA, Major League Baseball, at all levels. So this is about the people more than the actual sport, if that makes sense, the non-contextual software part.
Yeah, so I guess coaching is, you know, as everyone usually thinks about it, is as, you know, being in sport and kind of related directly to outcomes in sport and performance. But really, it's a people's business, isn't it? So that's quite an important factor of it.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's the challenge as well with coaches at any level. They have different challenges. You know, grassroots have different challenges just to get kids engaged and to keep them coming back. But also pro level elite have the pressure of everyone judges them based on a result. And sometimes people can get caught up in the technical and tactical and not really understand what are the source of success. And the source of success is people's behaviors and how we influence them, not just our athletes, but importantly ourselves, and our awareness of how to do that is key.
Yeah. So you said you were kind of in the military for a long time. What caused you to then move kind of more into sport with what you do?
Well, I'd just come from Commando Forces in the early 90s, just served operationally after the first Gulf conflict. I was a physical training instructor. So I went early 90s to a recruit training center and started to obviously train the recruits coming through. And we had them for 10 weeks. There was different platoons and we had a competition at the end of 10 weeks where it's obstacle courses, endurance, etc. And for the first year, 18 months, my platoon would win every single competition. So I thought, I'm awesome at my job. And then one day, one of the parents came up to me and said, oh, my son doesn't stop talking about it. You've really changed his life. And this was off a pass-off parade. And the light bulb went off that I'd also changed the life of every single recruit that hadn't passed in that had gone back to civilian life. So at that moment, I realized I was pretty useless at my job because I wasn't really influencing people. I was just saying, keep up with me. Here's the hardware, if you like. So I went on that journey then, and it's through evolution. I just started to reach out to explore, you know, where's the correlation in education, in sport, in what we do, and just started to work through luck with some Super League teams, which had success with them. and then moved into Premiership Rugby through word of mouth, and then had success there. And this was sort of 2000, 2001. And it just evolved and evolved. And although I get a lot of work opportunities in the corporate sector, and I do some, my passion is really in sport. And I love the grassroots stuff. I think it's been over 30 sports now, but I also love the pressures of the pro elite level. But what's really interesting is I use the same principles with 5-6-year-olds as I do with international full pro athletes. There's other elements to put in, but the fundamentals are exactly the same.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been in coaching, I think this is my eighth year now. So, you know, relatively inexperienced compared to the guests that I get on the podcast. But certainly in my time as a coach and in coach education, there's definitely been more of a shift towards kind of developing those soft skills and that kind of software-based stuff that you mentioned. And with this came that kind of change, more kind of towards this athlete-centered approach to coaching. And you know, it's a bit of a soundbite repeated over and over when you go on these courses. What are your thoughts around that? I know you talk a lot about need-centered coaching. What are your thoughts around athlete-centered coaching?
I think it's a real frustration for me, Jamie, because like anything, what tends to happen is social media, YouTube, Twitter, etc., can be a really good tool, but it also can be dangerous. So I think what's happened with athlete-centered is that people have heard about it, or people have said, that's what this guy's doing and is successful, or this what this female coach is doing. And they don't really understand what it is. Now, governing bodies and others have also started to look, and everybody uses the words of, you know, this is the type, putting the person first, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we really want to be doing this. And they talk about what we want, but what we don't often do is actually share, what does that look like? And importantly, where do I start? Where are my steps? How can I develop it through? So my frustration has been, I didn't know mine was athlete or need-centered when I started. It evolved. I mean, it's, you know, it's probably ahead of its game, 30 years development just on this. But it started to be called that. But then when I went into other sports, other organizations, other teams, people were saying, look, we do athlete-centered too. And I was looking at it and I'm thinking, this is not athlete-centered at all. So I was getting a bit frustrated with people really not understanding what it is, putting a label on the fact you just ask a bunch of questions, which is not what true athlete-centered is. So what happened was basically a guy that I've been mentoring now, a Great Britain basketball coach, Alan Keane, I've been mentoring for about 10 years now. We were having discussions and he was getting frustrated as well because he was a good practitioner of athlete-centered. But he was seeing, and I was seeing, that actually when people were saying it was athlete-centered, it wasn't from what we saw. So Alan came up with, why don't we call it need-centered? Because basically when you speak, Mark, and when we work through this, it's about the need of the athlete in that moment. So the reason why I call my work now need-centered is because now people don't associate it inaccurately with what their perception of athlete-centered is. They can ask, oh, what's this need-centered? What's different about it? And then I can share what it is. So sometimes it's a perception of a statement, but the challenge is it's not about a conversation. It's not about a PowerPoint or a video presentation saying, go, oh, I really like that. It's about understanding, one, what it looks like, and secondly, how to develop the change in the individuals within that organization to facilitate true athlete-centered, which is actually need-centered.
Yeah, so I'm glad you gave us that kind of very quick, like almost whistle-stop tour of, you need to establish, you know, what it looks like, what it is, and how you develop it. We're going to come on to all of those. Could you just start with explaining how need-centered coaching differs from athlete-centered coaching? My understanding of it is it's not always what the athlete wants, which is what I tend to see a lot when people talk about an athlete-centered approach to coaching, but more kind of what they need as opposed to what they necessarily want.
Yeah, this is one of those poor interpretations of athlete-centered. So, you know, that's why the need-centered came in. In essence, need-centered is all about understanding what is needed for that athlete in that moment in time and facilitating that. So if I use the word, my interpretation of value, anyone that does anything needs to see the value in it. Now, they may not like it, but they need to see the value in it. So this is aligned to the need-centered approach. So what it is not just asking questions and facilitating what the athlete wants to do in that moment, having loads of discussions. It's understanding that the full spectrum of the sliding scale of coaching, from allowing all the way through to discussing, to challenging, to asking, to put scenarios in place, to stepping back, is a full spectrum of coaching, which is where need-centered sits. And it's understanding that there are times when you need to do things and an athlete needs to do things that they may not like doing. But actually, in that moment, that is what is needed for their development to allow them to get to what I call the lighthouse. Agreeing, where do we want to get to? If I watched you in a competition, if I watched you in practice, in preparation for a competition in off season, if we're looking at you, your dream, what does it look like to be the best you can be? Can you talk me through and show me what that is? And understanding, right, well, that's your lighthouse. So now what we need to say is, if we agree that's where we want to get to, that's the vision, that's the lighthouse, what we need to do is, what do we need to do every day to adjust, to facilitate that in our behaviors, to bring it alive? So what are we doing every time? What are we doing sometimes? And what are we not doing that we know we should be doing, but we take the other option, the easy option? Identify what they are and then say, okay, so where do we need to start? Where's the one or two critical elements that, if there's 20, what's the one or two that's going to have the biggest impact, the most important? What do they look like now? How can we apply it now? Where's your acceptables and unacceptables and the behavior to bring this alive? What are you going to own? What do you need from me and the other athletes around you to support you in that? Let's share it. Let's understand it. Okay, let's agree success in this session is for you to bring that alive. Show me what that looks like now. And that's your need-centered philosophy and approach. And the principle of identifying what they are. Everyone involved understands the need for them, linked to something, the critical outcome where we need to get to. Understanding what it looks like in a moment and putting priority on the success criteria of that in that session, and not getting caught up in the technical and tactical or some other thing that everyone's doing. And we're missing the point of, actually, for you, your need is this in this moment. So let's review that first, because we've agreed that's your most important thing to develop.
Yeah. And I guess the kind of real kind of foundation that comes back to is being able to communicate the value in everything to the athletes. Because if you can't communicate that value to the athletes, then it doesn't make sense to them and they're not necessarily going to buy into it.
Yeah, and I think this is another challenge where athlete-centered is misinterpreted. It's not about selling things to athletes. It's not about asking them a ton of questions. Our aim should be to make ourselves redundant. That should be our aim as a coach. So what does that look like? That looks to me that actually an athlete can manage their own state, and if not, they can use their peers to help them to understand what they need to do in the moment, to commit to it with intent, and to evaluate live the choice they made and their execution to it without the need for the coach under any type of pressure. So in order to facilitate that, it can't be me, any coach, actually attempting to sell something to an athlete. What we need to do is get them to explain to us the value, and then get them to understand how to self-evaluate. So I use a principle of player first, player last, which underpins the way you should be having a conversation with an athlete. So instead of imagine now in swimming context, someone's just finished two lengths and they come to you. And instead of us now asking a ton of questions, we should just be going, review what you got for me. That athlete will then evaluate effectively based on what we've agreed the success criteria is. Me as a coach is listening based on their interpretation and what I saw. And then I have a bunch of interventions following what I've just heard, the accuracy of that evaluation from that swimmer. So now what I have is, okay, now I can have the dialogue and use many interventions to ensure accuracy or to ensure that they're nailing it. And then the last thing, the player last, is they're telling me, okay, so what are you going to do now? Not me telling them yeah. telling me, because other people need to do it. So all of a sudden now what we're seeing is that if we don't spend time is getting every single athlete at any age to be able to self-evaluate themselves based on their own success criteria, then what we're doing is we are always going to struggle in developing the type of athlete we want, because what they end up being is reliant on us, and we want them to be reliant on themselves. So actually, there has to be a shift in athletes' interpretation and coaches' interpretation of how should dialogue be between coach and athlete. And importantly, how should dialogue be between athlete and athlete? There's sometimes when you can link them up and you step back. But if we are continually thinking, they come to me, they just look at me silently and I have to ask a bunch of questions, we're totally missing the point of what our role should be in developing the athlete.
Yeah. I think you mentioned there about that kind of predetermined kind of set of criteria for what success looks like for a performance. Yeah. You know, we had a lot of time off recently due to a pandemic, and I had a lot of time to reflect on my own practice. And so it's where I heard you mention this before on another podcast, is that I've often now, looking back, had a conversation with an athlete before a race and said, well, and we've kind of agreed on what they need to do well in the race. And then afterwards I've fed back to them something completely unrelated to that. And to then, like, looking back on that now, it must be almost like a mixed message, because the athlete's thinking, well, we agree this is what I'm aiming for, and then I've done that, but you're telling me that I've done other things and other things wrong, and you've not even fed back to me about the things we said we were going to do right. So, you know, making sure that kind of pre-agreed kind of almost criteria for success is at the forefront of those conversations is key.
Yeah, it's one of the challenges for coaches is they, you know, based on their scanning, when I say scanning is what they're consistently seeing in competition and in practice, is from that data a coach is capturing, is being able to effectively filter and only have the dialogue with the element that you've pre-agreed first. And it always should be behaviors first anyway. So that may be, right, we're nailing it now. Okay, success criteria, review, please. So what we end up having is coaches, because they see something else, they go, oh, this, I really want to share this because this is really important. But actually, no, success criteria, let's nail that. If that's nailed, if there's something that we can move on to, yeah, that's fine. But that's not our critical success criteria. We don't mention it. We can recall it. We can note it. Maybe something we work on in future. But in this moment, we're reviewing what we agreed success was, and only that. And this is where it becomes a jumbled message, as you say, because then what we end up with, we just end up with any athlete going, well, okay, well, I'll just tell coach what coach wants to hear. I'll listen in and nod. But actually what I do want to do now is just walk off. Because they may be, an example in competition, they may be, the whole review may be based on their result, not based on their behaviors and their application, their choices. So now they're just thinking, well, I lost. So coach is just talking to me about a bunch of stuff. Coaches also then could be influenced by the results. So now their interaction is ineffective because it's influenced by the result and not based on what we said success was. So this is why the awareness of coach and the coach is being able to manage not what they're seeing, because they want to see it all, but understand, I need to be looking for this. This is priority. And then I need to make sure I'm honest to what we pre-agreed. And it should never be pre-agreed just before a competition either. This should have been pre-agreed before in practice. So when it comes to competition day, it should never be the coach reminding the swimmers. It should be, okay, Jamie, what you got for me? Sarah, what you got? What's your success? Talk to me. What would that look like? And then it's the swimmer telling coach, go, great, love that. And then anytime through that, that's the only thing we agree. Bam, bam, bam. How can I support you with that? So it's about how can we develop the behaviors in practice that we're going to use in competition. That's not just how we swim. It's how we interact, how our mind can be right, our confidence, how we evaluate ourselves and not be caught up in where we are in positions, if that's a negative influence. So there's a lot going on there, Jamie, but it's definitely about being honest to actually just discussing what we pre-agree. And the pre-agreement's got to happen before the competition. And actually, it should be led by the player, not by the coach.
Yeah. So just kind of final little bit there on need-centered approach to coaching before we come on to speak about team culture and high performance. What would you kind of... just as a real kind of bullet point summary almost, what are some of the key changes coaches need to just be aware of in terms of making sure they're doing their athletes justice with that need-centered approach?
Yeah, so number one is you have to baseline yourself and have your awareness of how you're talking, how effective you are. So definitely that's filming yourself, watching it back, just looking at your own behavior and the interaction, getting to understand the person of the swimmer and not who they are in the moment, but who they can be. So let's not allow our unconscious bias to negatively influence their potential and growth. And then provide the tools you want based on how you want them to be. So if you want them to self-review and make decisions, develop an environment and give them the tools where they can do that, and then ensure you give them the space to practice that. Otherwise, what we end up doing is we end up continuing what I call putting plaster on things. So we want a quick fix now. We want a quick fix now. And because we just want to give them the answer and they're just looking at us blank. And by putting that plaster on, we're never developing the person. So always think need-centered is about. It's not what a player, athlete wants. It's what they need in the moment. But I need to understand, one, myself and them. We both need to agree it, and we both need to be honest with it. And if it takes time, it takes time. But we are where we are. We're ready when we're ready. But we need to be patient, relentless, based on what we agree is your one or two things that is most important to you to facilitate your need. And that's the essence of need-centered.
Yeah. So coaches, if you're listening, I think all of us need to be very careful in terms of making sure that we're not doing our athletes a disservice, and that at the end of that athlete's career, they can honestly say that the coach did what was right for them rather than just what the athlete wanted to do because it felt good or because it was fun or whatever. And ultimately, there's no reason why a need-centered approach can't be fun and can't feel good, but it's just making sure that it is all the time what the athlete needs is really important there.
Yeah, what you will find is when you start using need-centered effectively, it will be the most engaging and enjoyable environment to be in, because the quality of dialogue and the fear is awesome, and the fear is taken away, and you're developing people that actually embrace and accept feedback and not be fearful of it or put up barriers. So we're not just developing the swimmer, we have to develop ourselves, but also we're developing the peer-to-peer to allow to be effective in how they communicate and how they listen and accept feedback. So that culture and environment is what gets kids coming back to the sport, because they feel valued. Even if they don't feel valued in school or somewhere outside, they're always in a pecking order. When they come to your environment, they're valued for who they are, and all you're asking them to do is be the best they can in the moment, and you support that. And you're going to challenge yourself to be the same. So that is the most enjoyable environment. And there's places that use this all the time in different sports. And when you go up there, I've had senior international coaches in tears watching young kids interact in a way they haven't even seen their senior athletes interacting. So it's a special place to be. It's hard to develop because we need to put a lot of effort in our own behaviors as a coach, as an influencer, to facilitate the environment we want for our athletes.
Yeah. You've also done a lot of work on culture and developing cultures in teams. Part of the notion that performance is a behavior, and it's not an outcome. You can have a performance group within a club that not necessarily performing in terms of an outcome at a really high level yet, but the behaviors and how they go around their business is their performance behaviors. What does high performance mean to you?
Well, I'm not a fan of high performance, because for me, there's either leisure or performance. So I don't see high performance or high elite or whatever it is performance. I just see performance and leisure. And I use that, I scan for them in behaviors. So as you mentioned there, Jamie, my philosophy for the whole of my business has been performance is a behavior, not an outcome. And what I mean by that is what you do in the moment in your behavior, which will dictate your future. So excellence I see is doing the best you can with what you have in the present moment. So this is where a novice on day one can pursue excellence, and somebody that's been doing it for 10 years that wants to get in a place, an Olympic medal, can pursue excellence. It's nothing to do with your competency in physical ability or skill. It's about your behavior in the moment. So when I talk about leisure and performance as a behavior, I've seen pro, very wealthy, big contract pro athletes having a leisure behavior. I've seen young kids that are just starting out having a performance behavior. So what we need to understand is that it's not outcome led. Outcome is a product of many variables, and we may not know what they are before we first see that athlete in front of us. But what we can see is what is their behavior like in all the things they do. And then what you can agree is what that behavior looks like for each individual. So you can have in the same organization, and many are, you can have a mixed ability where some say, I just want to come and swim, or my parents have dropped me off because they want to go and play tennis. I don't really want to be here. And you may have people, I really want to represent my country in swimming. You know, at 6, 7 years old, you may have that. Now, two things there. What we need to do is go, okay, great, but what would excellence look like for you? So how can you enjoy this, even if that leisure kid? We can go, well, I want to swim a lot. I said, okay, so let's get you swimming a lot. Let's do a deal. So let's swim as well as you can. So an example, let's get into swim. So example would be, it says, well, coach always has a go at me because I can't do butterfly for a full length. So the coach always has a go at me and they keep giving me technical points and stuff. And I just get, I just don't want to do butterfly anymore because I just get negative. So you say, so this is an example of good coaching. So we say, okay, so how long can you do it for? Oh, no one's asked me that before. I can do it for half a length. Okay, great. So you commit and show me half a length of your best butterfly and then cruise in the rest of the way, and then we can review at the end. Oh yeah, I can do that. Great, bang. Now you may have somebody else that's looking very different in what their behaviors are, and you can agree with them. So when we're developing cultures, it's really important to understand, look, somebody, let's scan where their behaviors are. Are they leisure or performance? But let's facilitate some successful behaviors that everyone can say, I can apply that, even though I may be doing other stuff. So a performance swimmer would be somebody that does a mobility, does their conditioning, does any rehab, prehab, gets their nutrition, gets their sleep in, all before they get into the pool. And when they're in the pool, they understand their critical pathway, where they need to work and develop within stroke. So they're doing a lot of stuff there, but it's understand what that looks like and the support they need. A leisure might be, well, I'm not going to do any of that. I just want to swim when I get to the pool. Well, we can still agree what excellence would look like for you in that moment. And let's agree those behaviors and then get, importantly, then get the kids at any age and adults to understand each other's paths, what their pre-agreed excellence is in the UAE's unacceptable, acceptable and excellence, and support each other and empathize that everyone's different, but also people can change. So then you may get someone that's leisure going, oh, I'm really enjoying this now. I'm more engaged. Well, I can do 3/4 now on butterfly. Oh, great. So some of those will start saying, oh, hang on, I need a bit more now. And they may start shifting their behaviors into more performance behavior. So we've got to remember, culture isn't this fixed, everyone does the same. Culture is about engaging in everyone and understanding, are they pursuing excellence based on their goal and their need? And let's agree what that looks like and share it and support each other within living that very behavior. And that's about understanding the person before the swimmer, before the athlete, because the person is the consistent, the 24/7 is the person. The swimmer is not that. So it's understanding that is what great culture should be. And sometimes we don't spend enough time setting that up at the beginning and then scanning for that before we scan for the swimming part. So let's scan for behaviors. There's lots of tools we can use to do that before they come in, that little engagement. Agree work ons for them, only review based on their work ons, getting players to review each other and understand each other. So there's many elements, but it's understanding that the environment actually can be different for different people, but they can all pursue their own kind of excellence within the same club, within the same hour.
Yeah, let's just dig a little bit into what you mentioned as UAE's unacceptable, acceptable and excellence, because it's not something that I think we hear a lot in swimming. I think UAE is something that people in swimming perhaps generally just to associate with the name of a country rather than a
yeah. So the remember, the E is exceptional, not excellence. So yeah. What we're looking at there is, if we frame, so let's take for example, if you're looking at, okay, someone's going to work on a stroke in the pool. So what we're asking them is, okay, so based on what's your work on for this stroke? Now they should know that. They should know, right, where I am now, and I'll make it up because I don't know swimming. I've mentored in some swim, but I don't know it technically. So it may be, okay, my reach and pull through the water. You know, that's the thing that's inconsistent now, and I've identified as my number one. So I need to make sure I do a good reach and pull through to this length each time on both sides. Okay, so what would be unacceptable on that? me not to focus on getting a reach in the water where I need to do every single time to get on that reach in. Okay, so what would be exceptional? Me nailing that consistently, even when I'm fatigued, I'm still making that reach. So at the moment, I've been able to do it for a length and a half, not yet two lengths. So exceptional, if I can nail that for two lengths, that would be exceptional for me. So what we're looking at then, and it may be on the unacceptable, maybe, and this is understanding the swimmer, it may be there are times when I lose it a little bit. So there are times when I can do two or three strokes in a row that are unacceptable in my reach. So unacceptable now would be for me not to recognize it after one stroke and change it. So now we're connecting with, okay, we know where that swimmer are. So that now we're agreeing the UAE for that element they're focused on, which could be very different for another swimmer in the pool in the lane next to them. So is that a fair explanation for you, Jamie, on what that would look like based on the agreed success criteria?
Oh yeah, absolutely. How much of that sits with leading by example and as coaches ourselves identifying in our own practices what our own UAEs are?
Yeah, so it's got to stem, number one. So there's a few, if you go on my Twitter and on YouTube, we can share that at the end. I've got some live video clips of young kids reviewing coach at the end of the session. So what basically we do in this environment is that the pursuit of excellence we share with everyone. So everyone should have a work on. What am I working on? For me, the number one thing that if I will give me my biggest return, have the biggest impact on me, this is what it is. And we share it with everyone. Well, coaches do the same. So the coach shares, right, for me, everyone, I need to make sure that actually, so I'll make one up, which is a common one, but I'll make it up. I need to make sure that if we do a review, if you nail it, I don't have to add anything. I can just say, show me. So if I start saying stuff after we've agreed something, because I feel the problem with me is I always feel I need to say something last, then you just need to, let's agree a word. So it may be a common word they use is pineapple. So you're giving the young kids, say, look, if I do this, you just say pineapple to me. And what that means is you've got it. I'm now talking. I shouldn't be talking. You just show me. So then that's the kind of environment we're looking at where we say, look, you understand you're human. I understand we're human. We're all pursuing excellence. For us, it may be different, but let's agree what that is for us. And let's help each other be the best we can be to support each other. So at the end of coaching sessions, the players review themselves, but importantly, the players review coach. How was I? Now, interestingly, if you did this with most cultures in clubs, you wouldn't get many swimmers actually saying to a coach honestly what they think of the coach. You probably just get, yeah, I think you're a great coach, or you might get the one that's just there, what I call assassins, that just anything to disrupt, might say something, but it's not honest and it's not really thoughtful and supportive. When you develop the right culture, what you'll hear is true honesty and support. So one of the video clips I shared was I think it's football and rugby, but they're pre-teens, 9, 10, 11 year olds. And what you'll hear there is you'll hear one of the players say, so we set UAEs on the work-ons as well. And they thought, well, I thought you're an exceptional coach because you did some one-to-ones, and his work-on was one-to-ones. And then the next player, young kid, said, well, actually, I disagree. I think you're acceptable because you did two one-to-ones. And the first one, I'm not sure what you said, but you had to do another one-to-one with the same player. So I'm questioning, was it effective? So this is a kid that's 10, 11 years old sharing this level of quality of dialogue with the coach. And then the coach says, yeah, right, remind me what my work on is, everyone. They said, more effective one-to-ones, coach. So well, I did two. One was effective, one possibly wasn't. So I'd agree, not exceptional, acceptable. So that's the quality of dialogue when you develop the right culture. And some people won't believe it till they see it. Yeah. Most of the point, because they're evaluating their present athletes based on who they are now without the interventions to develop that type of honesty in the environment to help each other be the best they can be.
I think that's really good, kind of having that honest interaction with your athletes. And you know what you said there was of like, was that like an 11 year old athlete saying that was about the effectiveness, yeah, of the one-to-ones. That's amazing in terms of that athlete having that confidence to say that to a coach, but also the awareness about the effectiveness of that as well, which is, it's really impressive.
Yeah. Well, one of the things there, Jamie, is it has to be critical as part of this need-centered approach is you'd have to take away the fear. So we have to develop an environment where people will interact because there's value to it, and people will listen with open ears, open mind, open heart, to actually be open to changing their own opinion based on what they hear, not just waiting for their time to speak. And importantly, if someone commits to something, even if it doesn't come off, they'll never get a frustrating or an angry conversation from coach. It will be, you committed, that was great, let's review it together. So when you take that fear away, what you end up with is people, one, they enjoy it more, secondly, they're more engaged, third, they'll commit to more things because you've taken the fear away, and finally, they'll interact more honestly. And what you'll find is there'll be swimmers that will say, coach, I don't understand this. And before, they were going, well, I'm not going to say it because everyone's kind of nodding, let's just get in the pool and swim, and they don't understand what was being asked of them. So there's a big shift, and taking the fear away is one of your indicators that your environment is starting to grow in the way you want it to.
Yeah. That's really important, and really kind of should be kind of a real kind of marker in terms of how you can then tell whether you're moving in the right direction is whether people have, you know, that they're not fearful of coming forward and giving their points of view. Now we always ask our guests to kind of sum up their topic in 3 points. We've already kind of got your 3 points for the need-centered coaching. Let's just finish here with your key points for developing good performance cultures in teams.
Yeah, so number one always is just film yourself, film the environment, do it often enough so people forget the camera's there, which won't take long, and just sit down and watch it with no filters. Really look for, is it what you think it is? Are you interacting in the way you are? Are you scanning everybody everywhere, or are you just caught up in the one or two people? Do you have some unbiasedness now based on your favoriting certain people, and you're struggling to interact with someone else, so you're just pushing them to the side? You know, how effective are you? Establish that baseline. Once you've established that baseline, share that with another coach. So you, when you film yourself, just find another coach. It can be a different sport, and actually, honestly, from a different sport is really valuable, because they'll just look at the behaviors and share what you think. Get some real dialogue going, and then set yourself up for what the lighthouse needs to be for you. Just be honest with it. What does it look like? If I walked in and saw your dream environment, what would I see? What would I feel? What would I hear? Okay, now you know that. Spend time finding out how you can embed that, but find out what are the one or two things. And then remember, if you're gonna change takes time. So set yourself up a supporting framework, one, to know how to change, secondly, to support the change long enough to embed it, and expect the same level of patience with your athletes. They have to see the value in change, but remember, unless you're consistent with it, it will just regress back, and it takes time, and everyone has bad days. So it's this thing about, what are the one or two important things that can give us a big impact? What do they look like? Let's share it with everyone. Let's set our UAs against it. Let's set up, what if they don't? How can we support each other? And just go with that. Go with it. Keep it simple. Remind me what we agreed. And that is where change happens. Don't get caught up, and this is the danger with many people, don't get caught up in listening to tons of podcasts, tons of YouTube, or watching a lot of other coaches, and just continually trying new stuff. All you're going to do is discredit the value of what you're doing. You're going to hinder growth, and you'll get no change. Find out the one or two things. Know what they look like, know how to start the steps of change, and support it long enough to embed it before you move on to the next stage. And that's the secret of success when you're embedding culture.
Excellent. So we'll just wrap up the podcast here now. Mark, thank you very much for your time. If people want to kind of learn more about this, how can they do that?
Well, I'm PDS coach on pretty much everything. So PDS, Papa Delta Sierra, PDS Coach. So Twitter at PDS Coach, website is pdscoach.com. The website's got a ton of over 25 free podcasts, video examples. There's also where all my support is on full interventions of organizations, teams, and individual coaches online and live. So everything you need there. Question for you, Jamie, is what's been any key moments for you where it's made you reflect in our conversation?
For me, it was about the unacceptable, acceptable, and exceptional. And that kind of having that environment within a team where everyone's honest and everyone's kind of reviewing everyone else in terms of, you know, everyone's comfortable with being able to have a critique from anyone else in that environment. That's really important for me.
Yeah, and don't forget that great example I used with the swimmer saying, I can't do a length of butterfly. Get past the can't. What can you do? I can do a half length. Great. Show me the best half length. Set EUAs against that and then cruise in the next and we can stretch that. So set yourself up for what can you do? Show me that. Set EUAs against that. Don't get caught up in what you can't do and then get frustrated because they continually aren't applying the very things that you feel they can or actually they're not committed to doing themselves. So it's all about that dialogue and developing honest interaction. That's where your success will always come from.
Yeah. So all that's left now is for me to thank the listeners for tuning in again and point you guys towards our social medias, which is at the Poolside Pass on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, and also our website, www.thepoolsidepass.com. Mark, thank you very much. And hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. I hope everyone took something from this. And if you do nothing from this podcast, start filming yourself how you coach, or just do a sound audio if you're not allowed to do the filming. Just do the sound on your phone, press record, and just listen to your voice and how you interact. It's just establishing your reality is going to be key to change.
So, guys, until next time, take care and keep coaching.